And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into 3D here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this rainy Thursday here in town. Yeah, it's nasty out there. I think it's going to be like this all day. So if you're going to be out and about, be careful, because there's probably going to be a lot of standing water before it's all said and done. Darren McFarland, that's me. Derek Mason, that's him.
It is I.
Were you on an interview? What's going on? A date? What were you doing?
I had a board meeting, man.
I
wasn't on a date.
He's looking dapper.
Nor was I on an interview. You know, had to conduct an interview or on an interview.
Board. I like that. I was in a board meeting.
With some other very important people.
We were having a big conference room meeting.
Hey, man.
You look nice.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, that's every day.
Way overdressed for this show.
It's every day. That's well, every day. I'm way
right,
overdressed every day.
That's true. That's a good point.
Handsome guy, aren't
but
I,
today,
I'm not today.
Just read your notes, Chase. He's got it all written out for you.
I know.
Yes. I got everything on the desk,
Derek,
for you, Chase.
That is very true.
My notes.
Could not agree more.
My notes consist of, yes, Derek, you look very dapper. Yes,
you
Darren, your hair
are
is nice.
One handsome.
And yes, Willie, go Doors.
Hey, Willie, I love you. What's up with your color combination? Day, man. Color
Willie's notes anchored down.
Yeah,
that's for you, Willie.
He got on the light. Is that considered two-tone
you're
blue?
Like always,
I don't know.
You're always a
rainbow. Oh my goodness! Y'all wore the same color shorts again.
Well, at least it isn't the same color shirt.
No, Chase.
I got the shirt.
Y'all got different shirts. Yes,
it's not the same shirt.
Wow,
I do have that shirt.
I know you wore it,
but I don't have. I don't have that shirt on.
No.
It's the same color.
No. They did it again.
It's
not
color.
As bad.
They did it again.
It's not as bad.
No,
as
we got to take another picture and let the people decide. You got to take off your jacket, Willie, and we got to take a picture of it again. It happened again.
Oh boy. Maybe this could be the unofficial beginning of our wear a free shirt every day for 2 weeks.
I want to see that.
Wow. How did y'all manage this again, man?
Oh, I don't know. What color are your shorts, Darren?
The same color.
No, they're not quite the same.
Yes,
it's close. It's very close. It's not quite the same.
If we were looking
close.
If we were looking at that from a distance, we would think y'all had on the same thing.
Besties.
I didn't even notice.
I love you too.
Do you think we actually coordinate this? Do you think this is accident, or do you think secretly?
Oh, my
like,
goodness.
Hey, let's mess with them. Let's wear the green shorts again today. That would be fun.
You want to know the truth?
What's up?
I could see Willie suggesting that to mess with them, and Darren just being like, that's stupid, and then it just happens.
I'm not doing that. That's stupid.
Why would it happen if I said that's stupid? Yeah.
Well, I mean, it just like a couple days later, it just happens by circumstance.
Oh, I would think that would be fun to do, to mess with you guys.
Okay.
Wow. So that's what you did?
Yeah, kind of like Vegas did with Nashville. They messed with them and took James Neal.
Well, you knew it was going to happen. You knew it.
Yep.
Here's what I don't understand. We talked about it for several days, right? Starting when the protected list started filtering out. So a lot of people had plenty of days to have that soak in. The reality was there. Why did everybody freak out on Twitter when they
I don't know. I thought the same thing.
There were a lot of people freaking out
talking
on
about
Twitter,
it.
Like, I can't believe it. I can't believe they let this happen. Well, why weren't you saying this on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of last week when it was the decision hadn't been made yet?
It's a great point.
We had the debate on the air. We laid it out. We asked people a couple different times to call in. There weren't a lot of people calling in going, you can't let James Neal go. There wasn't that sentiment.
It was Sissons' call. Got to keep Sissons.
Yeah.
Got to keep Sissons. You can't let him.
Neal's
gone, everybody in an uproar.
I understand that when you watch that list of players come out, James Neal, by far, other than Marc-Andre Fleury, is the most accomplished player on that list. There's no way around it. But there are reasons why they did what they did. We discussed all those backwards and forwards. If you listen to the show, you know we covered it. So I don't get it. It would have been nice to make a deal to protect him. But you saw what George McPhee got from a lot of teams. He got a lot of extra assets And David Poile just didn't want to give up those assets for James Neal.
He didn't want to mortgage the future.
That's the key, is the reality is they probably only had James Neal for one more year. It was going to be very hard to re-sign him to another contract, so I think they basically said, you get James Neal for one year, we will keep all of the other guys that we feel like will be part of the plan for the next two, three, four, 5 years. Thinking about Auberg and Sissons and these other guys.
Because Neal's going to want, like, he's gonna make, if he's dollar. Making five, he's going to want more. So six?
Yes. There's no question. So and he just, would be, and he'd be in his age 31 plus seasons at that point in his career. And so that kind of investment in a guy who's 30 something is a, it's not a great investment, to be honest.
Well, then we shouldn't have the discussion about Oshie. So anybody who talks about it, we should not bring that up. It's not a good investment.
It's a risky investment. I don't know if it you never know how it's going to be. You hope it's a great investment, but the bottom line is you have to overpay for guys like that.
Well, I mean, if
those guys are overpaid.
If it's too much for the guy you know and he's a year younger, then it definitely has to be too much for the guy you don't know and is a year older.
I think there's logic to that.
Right?
No question.
You can't make the case for Oshie if you can't make the case for Neal. You already know what he brings
to
the table. You know him for 3 years.
Now, one stat that I saw that is worth noting is that, and this because this is a key part of the question that I'm sure that they weighed pretty heavily. Is James Neal on the decline? Is he in the prime of his career? How much do you really project his value to be going forward?
Well, I think we know the answer. It's not, at least the Predators' perspective, it's not that he's in the prime. If he was in the prime, they would not have put him unprotected.
Yeah, I think if he were 27 and not getting ready to be 31.
Well, if he was when they traded for him. That's
right.
That's where they probably felt like he was in his prime when they made the trade 3 years ago.
So I think they rationalize it's better to lose one asset that you would have for 1 year, as good as he is, rather than give up more than one asset, two or three assets to keep him.
They chose what I've been laying out this entire time. Do you want to take a lump or do you want to take lumps? They decided to go singular and go lump.
Right.
Just take our lump.
Right. Whereas take the Jets, who I didn't hear much about. They wrangled it, so basically George McPhee took their tough guy, Chris Thorburn, who doesn't play much other than to fight. He's aging. But to do that, they gave up a first rounder and a second rounder.
That's ransom. They did. That's how much. That just tells you, and maybe that was another thing. Maybe David Poile wanted to try to pull that off, but realized the sticker price, which we've talked about.
And he hinted at that.
Was just too much.
If you read the article that they released, that's exactly what he said.
If you've ever tried to buy a car,
yeah,
and you can't get the price, and you just realize that it's not going to be comfortable for you, then you have to walk away.
You have to walk away. And I've made that mistake as a customer. I didn't want to leave, and sometimes you take the bad deal. That's what their game.
You can't be married to it. Don't take the bad deal. You can't. You have to know when to walk away.
Well, I think the Predators, I believe, and I'm pretty sure you guys think the same, they're in a position where they didn't have to. They didn't have to work out some crazy deal. They didn't have to overpay. They didn't have to, mortgage the future to keep James Neal. Because they're in a position to have enough young players, enough good young players, coupled in with some veteran guys that know what winning looks like, know how to win. They have their goalie for the next couple of years or so, and have a backup goalie that's pretty good too as well. He's shown that he can play at a high level in this league. So they're in a position that, say, someone like, the Blackhawks, where things are just going wrong for them. They're in a better position than the Blackhawks, and they don't have to, again, mortgage, their future to try to keep one guy because they think that one guy is going to change the landscape of how they move forward.
So. When we come back, we will have Tennessee Athletic Director John Curry. He will join 3D next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. For a lot of our listeners, when they hear that music, they think good things, happy thoughts, sunshine. Well, it's raining here in Nashville. It's kind of crappy. So just be aware of that. It's going to probably rain all day. If you're going to be out and about listening to the show, just be careful out on the roads. Probably a lot of standing water. We promised you that we would head east when we came back, and we're going to do that. We're going to head to Knoxville and bring in UT Athletic Director John Curry. He's been nice enough to call in. Good morning, John. How you doing?
Good morning. It's awesome to be on 102.5 The Game with you guys.
Well, thanks for doing this. We really appreciate it. Let me ask you this, as you are approaching 3 months now on the job there in Knoxville. What is one thing that maybe has surprised you, and you can take that however you want, take it wherever you want, just 3 months on the job, what has surprised you the most to this point?
Well, it's been an incredible ride. I think this is 75 days or 74 days since we got started. But as I said previously, the most impressive thing to me coming back to the University of Tennessee after being gone for 8 years is how much this campus has been transformed from an academic perspective in terms of the university rising into the national rankings academically, as well as the beautification of the campus, all the new academic buildings, our new student union, Tickle Engineering Building. The beautification of our campus is incredible. And then Knoxville has boomed, and downtown Knoxville is overrun with people and downtown apartments and condominiums and all that kind of stuff. It is really, really a cool city. I believe we have the best city in the conference, without a doubt. And we're really excited that we're moving forward and grateful to be here.
Another city that's booming is, of course, our market. And for some of us, it's a little too much. But you know what? It doesn't matter. It's not going to stop. So we're just going to have to deal with traffic and infrastructure and everything else that comes with, you know, a major growth like Nashville. You know, there are a ton of UT alums in our market, in our city. How do you view, as the new AD at UT, how do you view Nashville?
Well, Nashville is an awesome place, and you know, kind of like coming back to Knoxville after being gone for 8 years. I was in Nashville back in January for the NCAA convention, and I went out to go to dinner. I was still at Kansas State at the time, and I went to dinner with some really great K-State people who live there in Nashville, and they took me to dinner down in the Gulch area. I had no idea that that existed, right? Because it didn't exist when I was here 8 years before. I got to stop at the Station Inn, which is one of my favorite places in the world, and it is definitely a very a special place for me that I spent a lot of time in my first 10 years here at the University of Tennessee. And we'll be back there for the UT All-Sports Picnic on July the 10th from 6 to 8 p.m. Down at Sycamore Farms, and looking forward to seeing a lot of all fans there.
Do you want to keep, as the AD, keep scheduling things? Like last year, kicked off the football season here in our city at Nissan Stadium. It was a basketball game against Gonzaga, who would eventually go on and play in the national championship game in our city at Bridgestone Arena. Do you want to continue to put your sports in this market for maybe a regular season game or what have you?
Sure. I think we always look for opportunities in markets that are special and important to the University of Tennessee, and Nashville, as the heart of the state of Tennessee, is incredibly important to our university. When I was here 10 years ago, I was part of putting together some of those basketball games back in the day. Scott Ramsey and all the National Sports Commission people are great people. And we'll look for opportunities that make sense down the road, you know, in football and in basketball. It'd be awesome to play a baseball game downtown sometime. We got a new baseball coach, Tony Vitello, who's doing an incredible job. He's been in Nashville a bunch already. We're in Orange, and we're going to reassert the prominence of Tennessee baseball across our state, and that goes along with all of our sports here at the University of Tennessee.
Last thing, John, on my end, I'm going to flip this over to Derek. I've been really intrigued by your letters to the fans. It's pretty interesting. I can't really think of very many other ADs that do that, and I could be wrong. It's not like I sit here and follow every Division I school in the country, but I think it's a little unique. Where did you come up with that concept, just to kind of constantly keep the fans informed and in what's going on behind the scenes?
Well, there are some other ADs that do that. Really, when I started at K-State, though, 8 years ago, we were kind of in disarray and had a trust deficit with our fans. And little by little, you know, I might have done five or six that first year, but then I kept getting great response from a totally diverse cross-section of our fans about how much they appreciated it and liked that communication. Now, my wife thinks they're too long, and she clicks out pretty quick. But it's been great here, the response that I think we've done about six here, and we'll do them you know, every 2 to 3 weeks. I might not do one in July when things are slowing down a little bit or on vacation, but we'll do them every 2 or 3 weeks or more often when the spirit moves us, when we have something important to share. It's also a way, as you know, I've got an email portal for fans to email me questions and things like that. And sometimes it'll be a question that I take from, you know, from getting a tweet from somebody or direct email or whatever, and be able to explain back, you know, answer that question broadly. So it's something we enjoy doing, and the response is tremendous. And who would think it from a, you know, a quote unquote old fashioned vehicle like email rather than you know, one of the Snapchat or WhatsApp or something like that.
Yeah, you're not periscoping it, is
exactly.
What you're saying.
I haven't figured out the periscope thing yet, but you know, maybe we'll get to that. Maybe Tom can help me with that.
Exactly. We'll talk with John Curry, UT's University of Tennessee's athletic director. Now you mentioned Twitter, as everyone else does, just about. They have it on their device. Do you have the Twitter app on your device where it's always constantly going off?
I don't look at Twitter constantly. And that is because I find, you know, especially back about 2011, 12, when I really kind of studied it and mm-hmm. got into it, I found that I'd be sitting there, you know, with 10 minutes before a meeting or a phone call, and all of a sudden I'd have been looking at Twitter for 30 minutes and I lost some time there. But we do pay attention. Mm-hmm. It is an important vehicle for us to share news and understand the pulse of our people. And I don't know, I'm not the top in the league in the number of followers. I think I'm closing in on 20,000, but it's been fun to have good response. And that is a good way. One of the different ways we can ensure that we have our message out there. You know, one of the things we do in intercollegiate athletics, we're such a mysterious enterprise to a lot of people. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I consider one of my responsibilities is the demystification of athletics. And, you know, here's the facts, here's what our budget is, here's why we make particular decisions. You know, people may not always agree with them, but at least if we've done our part to explain, you know, how we arrived at a particular decision, we've shown that there's some process and thought in that particular decision.
Now, you brought up a key word there, enterprise. And like any great CEO, to me, I consider college football, college athletics, a business. So with any CEO, he goes from one major corporation to another major corporation. Your responsibilities or your outlook on how you run the job tend to change. Sometimes you keep hold of your core principles, but each job brings its different components to it. Now, coming from K-State, Big 12, now you're here at UT, SEC, has there been some things that have changed for you, or how has some things, or how have you gone about your approach as of AD and at UT? Is it different from what it was at K-State?
Well, I think the fundamentals are the same. You know, one of the parallels between K-State and Tennessee is passionate fans. Now, Tennessee has a longer and richer history than K-State, but, you know, K-State's going to come play Vanderbilt in September there. You know, they'll have 10 to 15,000 fans that descend on Nashville. And I scheduled that game because I wanted this region to see, when I was at K-State, I wanted the Southeast to see that passion from those K-State fans. But so we had great passion there. We have great passion here at the University of Tennessee. So you mentioned college athletics was a business. And although we do have some business principles, mm-hmm. we are an enterprise, and we use that word deliberately because we're an enterprise with business principles. If mm-hmm. we were a business, you know, we've got 20 sports here at the University of Tennessee. If we were a business, we would shut down 18 of them because there's only two that generate a net surplus. So we have to remember that the core thing of what we do is education. We're in the education business, or enterprise, I should say. And our student athletes, you know, are at the forefront of what we do every day. And sometimes we make decisions that are for the betterment of student athletes, and for student athlete experience that you wouldn't make if you were in a business, because it's not a profitable decision. All right. So the fact that we, you know, that we fly charter airplanes for both men's and women's basketball, when Tennessee is fortunate to have a revenue stream associated with women's basketball, but it's not as significant as a men's basketball revenue stream. But we treat those sports exactly the same in terms of how we care for our student athletes, provide housing, nutrition, travel, et cetera. So we have to remember that we're in the education business first, and the student athlete business, even though the overall enterprise does generate some revenue, fortunately, which we turn around and invest in the student athlete experience.
Now, when you walked on campus and you got into everything, your job, was there anything from an infrastructure standpoint that you wanted to tackle first? Or, I mean, I'm pretty sure their facilities are top notch, and there's nothing that is pressing for the University of Tennessee and athletic department.
Well, I wouldn't say that. In African college athletics, there should always be something pressing, or you're going to fall behind real fast. Mm-hmm. And we were very fortunate in the early 2000s that we were able to raise some money here and build some pretty nice facilities. But you look ahead, and those facilities are now 10 years old. And so you got to continue to maintain and upgrade and candidly paint, right? So Neyland Stadium is 96 years old, sections of it, and there's a lot of steel out there, and a lot of it's rusting, and it's structurally sound, but in terms of aesthetics and looking like we're all buttoned up, you know, we got to paint. And Neyland Stadium is kind of like the Golden Gate Bridge. You start painting on one end, and by the time you get to the other, it's time to go back and start. We're spending $1 million this summer just on painting some of the steel at Neyland Stadium. We'll do the same for the next two summers. And then many of our fans who are listening right now probably sit in the south end of the stadium or the east side of the stadium, and they know that the services that are provided there in terms of basic fan amenities and ADA access are not nearly up to snuff, so to speak, to what they should be, you know, in 2017. So we'll be very strategic and deliberate and fiscally responsible, but we will proceed with the much needed modernization and upgrades to the basic fan experience, you know, concessions, restrooms, all that kind of stuff, ingress, egress of the stadium, and work hard to complete that master plan. As far as our other facilities go, I'm sitting in the Neyland Thompson Sports Complex and the Anderson Training Center and the Brenda Lawson Center, and what a beautiful facility we have. I've got to compliment Coach Jones. Does an unbelievable job of recruiting an organization, and the progress that's been made in this program under his leadership on the last 4 years is tremendous. Many people don't know that when he came here 4 years ago, we were one APR point away from ineligibility for the postseason, et cetera. And they've turned that around. They've got the best academic performance of the program in its history, both from a graduation rate and an APR standpoint. And then, you know, we had the best draft that we had since 2002. So I think we're on the cusp of really great things under his leadership.
John Curry is with us, Tennessee Athletic Director. John, I imagine when you're a new athletic director, relationship building is so important. Talk about how you start your relationship, your working relationship with Butch Jones, because obviously it's going to be very important going forward.
Well, we spent some time together, some at Caravan events. You know, one of the great things about being in the same, we're in the same, we're kind of like in an L-shaped angle of the building. So you can walk down to his office, and he can walk down to my office, which we both do. I stopped in on a staff meeting this morning and stuck my head in the door, and they got the whole staff. They're grinding away, getting ready for the season, to compliment them on the recruiting job they did on Saturday. From an organizational attention to details, these guys do an unbelievable job, and they're working very, very hard. It's very impressive to me. I'm just looking forward to continuing to get to know each other. And we got a big game coming up on September 4th. It's a very challenging game against Georgia Tech with what I describe as a unique offense, and I'm excited about that.
John, let's talk about a relationship you've had for a long time, and Philip Fulmer. The story comes out yesterday, his official role now with the school. How do you plan? What's your vision to how to use an ambassador like that to your advantage?
Well, first of all, I think we're all incredibly grateful for Coach Fulmer being willing to give up some of his time, right? And he's making a significant investment of his time and energy into advancing the entire University of Tennessee system throughout the state and really around the country. And I know Dr. DiPietro, our assistant president, who's provided great leadership for the university, had talked to him about this for some time. And when I got here, we were able to talk some more and build in some athletic stuff, because that's clearly very important. I mean, he represents the greatest era, period of time in the modern history of our program. And where we want to be, which is on that stage again with that trophy, just like we were in 1998. So I'm extremely pleased and excited, and He's going to be busy, and with the president and with Chancellor Davenport, who's doing a wonderful job for us. Grateful to her for hiring me, obviously. But I'm really excited and pleased that we're able to march forward together.
There's no question, as an ambassador, he's going to be a knockout. What about just as a sounding board for you or for Coach Jones or for both? Do you envision that kind of relationship developing where you sort of pick his brain behind the scenes on little things?
Sure, and Coach Fulmer is willing to help in whatever way he's asked, and that's the way he's been for the University of Tennessee his entire life and career. There's been a couple things that I've run by him already, and looking forward to doing that even more.
John, hope you continue to remain visible, because I think it's important today in really anything for people who are running things in a leadership role to be out there and amongst the people. I think that does breed success amongst programs. I think it helps. That's just my opinion. And I see that you've done that since you've arrived in Knoxville, and I hope you continue to do that. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Appreciate the opportunity and the platform, and hope to see a lot of you on July the 10th at the All Sports Picnic and Big Orange Caravan at Sycamore Farms.
No doubt about it. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Thank you all.
All right. That is UT Athletic Director John Curry, and we do appreciate him joining us. We'll take a break. Come back with more of 3D next. Appreciate John Curry for joining us here on 3D. Vanderbilt great Shane Foster will join us in the 11 o'clock hour, the second hour of 3D, in studio. We also may have a surprise guest for you during that hour as well.
Ooh.
What was your takeaway, one takeaway from John Curry? Derek?
He gave Butch Jones high praises. So that bodes well for Butch Jones, because
in June.
But like you said, you discussed this, we talked about this yesterday, and you mentioned it, when you come in as an AD, like any other job, you're going to evaluate, and there's going to be some changes made, unless you're doing your job exceptionally well. And in Butch's case, you're winning the SEC East championships or SEC championships, period. And obviously, Butch hasn't been doing that. They've underachieved, I believe, with the talent they have. But when the AD comes out and, he's saying glowing things about you, and granted, I know it's June, and the temperature can change come November, December, when they're, knee-deep in it. But as of now, he's singing his praises right now, and that's good for Butch Jones. That's good for his staff.
Willie?
I'm guessing he's doing a bunch of these today. Is that what it's like? So it's hard to judge a guy on an interview, first impression, when he's probably a little bit fried, and he's getting asked a lot of the same concepts. I thought he was a little mechanical. I was hoping to hear a little bit more personality from him. I look for those things. I don't worry as much on a first interview on specifically what he's going to say. I don't know. He didn't strike me as a guy that's got this booming personality that is going to be fun to listen to, which is certainly not the number one thing in a guy's job. But as you said, if his goal is to be a little bit more visible, be a little bit more personable, which would be very welcome based on the polar opposite in Dave Hart.
Dave Hart, who lived in an orange cave.
Then I had heard more along those lines about people that knew John Curry. I just didn't see it much in that interview. But just one interview.
That's fair. But I think the letters to the letter to the fans, that's interesting. That's something different. And actually, his last one that he did, it was a week ago. He actually broke some news in there that wasn't even out about hiring a coach or giving a coach an extension. It was, I think a swimming coach or something. But it's news as in it wasn't out there. That's pretty – I mean, look, that's a little nugget you're throwing. If every once in a while he puts out something for the first time in the letter to the fans, That's something different. And smart. It really gives you an insight. Like you,
it gives you a reason to follow him. It gives you a reason to want to hear what he has to say.
If you read it, he does give you some pretty detailed stuff of what's going on behind the scenes that you're not going to always get. You know, I don't really disagree with much you said. I did kind of feel like he was kind of going through the car wash today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's okay. But if he's going to be more visible, he's going to be more out there. Look, we've learned this in talking about the Predators. In today's, it's just like coaches. If your approach is, I'm just a football coach or I'm just a coach, fill in the blank sport, and that's all, then you don't get it. I would never hire somebody that says to me, I'm just a coach. I would never. Not in 2017. You just can't do that today. That's just not how it works. The job is much more entailed of getting out there, being visible, being amongst the fans, doing the stupid lunch things that you have to do, the lunch circuit and the speaking engagements and just doing all the things that comes with it away from the playing surface that probably most dread. I get it. Some embrace it. Some don't mind. It's no different than the AD. It's no different than what the Predators do. The Predators get out there, and the reason we talked about all the success that they had for off the ice, it's because they're very, very visible. They roll up their sleeves, and they get out there amongst the people. If you don't know Sean Henry, then you just haven't been to Bridgestone.
You're not really paying much attention. Mm-mm. I'll give you an example of a guy. I'll give you two examples of my first impression was similar to today. One has changed and one is not.
Okay.
Greg Sankey, when he first took the podium and we first interviewed him as the SEC commissioner.
A little robotic.
I thought it was a little robotic, not a lot of personality. When we saw him face-to-face and caught up with him at basketball media days,
mm-hmm. Totally different.
I thought he showed a lot more, a little more laid-back personality, not robotic. I have to give this persona. You know, I like that.
That's a good example.
Butch Jones has been the exact same to me from the day he took the job.
He's not gonna
change. Never going to give you.
This is what he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is so mechanical and so cliche-oriented. I really hope by this time he would show a little bit more personality, but that's the way he's going to roll. There's no question about that.
I think those are two really good examples.
See how John Curry.
I don't know where
John Curry may evolve. He might This is a starting point for him, and as he gets more comfortable and he gets more entrenched in that job, maybe we'll see a little bit more of what he's all about.
But going back, Derek, on what you said before, mm-hmm. Look, that's what you say when you haven't been on the post yet. What do you mm-hmm. say, 75 days? He hasn't been there 3 months yet. It's coming up on 3 months. I think he took over on April 1st. That's all great to say now when you're out of season, but we all know that's gonna change if this year is a 6-6 year, right?
Of course. That's why.
I don't know what the number is. I don't know what it has to look mm-hmm. like. I know it can't be 6-6. I'm not saying it's going to be. I'm saying if something like that were to happen, honestly, I think even 7-5, considering the work that's already been put in, mm-hmm. the body of work that's already there in place, and to know that it's not really taken any steps forward, and it has been up to this point, and then kind of hit a wall. Last year was when the explosion was supposed to happen, right? Mm-hmm. It was baby steps, but always forward progress. And then last year was supposed to be the explosion, and the explosion didn't happen. It was an 8-4 season
exactly.
in the regular season. So I don't know what that means for this year. To me, it seems like I don't think 6-6 and 7-5 will be acceptable. I could be wrong, but
not after, 4 years on the job and you've made steady progress each year. You can give Butch Jones at least that. He's made steady progress each year, and he's changed the working environment or the thought process or the mentality the program from where it was to where it's at now. So he has done some good things, but as we've always said, when you look around and you see as the AD said, Curry, they've had the most draft picks this past year than they've had in how many years. that's telling me one or two things. Well, that's really telling me one thing. Why couldn't you just develop this talent while they were there? If you got guys getting drafted high in the NFL, you got a bunch of guys that are on NFL teams right now that will more than likely make the team. And there were glowing things being said about these individuals from GMs and head coaches. Why couldn't you get them to play? Why couldn't you win more than 8 games?
I think that's honestly what finished things off for Les Miles.
Exactly,
I think his unbelievable,
you have all these top 10 picks.
Recruiting, which he was unbelievable in recruiting. And then they were pumping him out at the next level. And a lot of them, and in some cases, becoming superstars, which then worked against him when the fan base is going, no, wait a minute. You had these guys.
I think
why,
you guys.
Why didn't we win a championship? Why didn't we win? Why is Alabama ahead of us? We're doing the same thing.
I think you guys have just, you know, batted around something that is going to be discussed ad nauseum throughout the summer, and then as the season unfolds. Mm-hmm. And as you pointed out yesterday, Darren, the hype, the expectations this year for Tennessee by the experts are not nearly as high as they were last year. So if the season is disappointing in any way, then that's where John Curry is now going to have to shine, right? He's going to have to wade through all of the noise because there's going to be noise. Even if they're doing well, there's going to be noise. And he's going to have to decipher, you know, he's with Butch Jones every day. Long term, is this the right guy? Because there are people that are starting to question. There are some people that just right now don't believe Butch Jones is the right guy. I think he's done a lot of really good things. Mm-hmm. But as you guys discussed, once you raise the expectations and you start not delivering, there's going to be people that are upset. There'll be people that are irrational about it, and there will be people that make the argument rationally to where you got to weigh all of that stuff.
Well, the pressure is going to be on this year, I think, and for one reason only. And we discussed it yesterday with Chip Kelly. He's out there, and he's going to be coaching somebody's team next year. So if you're John Curry, you know Chip Kelly's resume in college. If Butch Jones wins six, seven games, yeah, he's been doing, recruiting is great. Do you then take another flyer on him for another year while Chip Kelly's just sitting there and probably want to come to UT?
Well, it also consider that after a year or two, and I don't know, I can't remember all the specifics, but did Butch Jones not get a couple of raises and coaching extensions since he's been there?
Sure.
So the buyout's got to be unbelievably high if you wanted to make a rash move like that.
We'll wrap up the first hour of 3D next. Shane Foster in the On Deck Circle here on 3D. Coming up in the next hour, he will be in studio with us. We will tell you what he's got up his sleeve, and he is nicely dressed, as always, making us look really bad. Well, other than Derek.
He's making y'all look bad, not me.
Because Derek had a board meeting this morning.
No, I knew Shane was coming. So.
We were in the conference room, and we were discussing some heavy topics. Derek Carr, we put this out there yesterday that he was on the verge of signing a $25 million a year contract, and it looks like all that has been finalized. And Derek Carr, I believe, does that make him the highest paid quarterback in the league?
Then second.
Is he worth it? And what will that mean for the Titans?
You're right.
That first contract will be up soon enough, and they're going to have to address that. What does that mean for him?
Is he worth it? He's worth it for Oakland. He is. Because Oakland, you got to look at it. Look, Oakland hadn't had a quarterback since Rich Gannon. If you think about it, since Rich Gannon. Hadn't had a quarterback since Rich Gannon. They hadn't had anybody else.
But Rich took him to a playoff.
But this is an AFC championship game.
This is their
game.
Guy they drafted. This is their guy that they invested a lot of time.
And that's what I'm saying.
And now a lot of money.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. He is worth it to them.
Okay.
He's taking them to the playoffs. Yes, he did get hurt. But if you look at Carr and his numbers, they have gotten better each year. He's gotten better as a quarterback each year. Add Amari Cooper to the mix. Get him a running back. The offensive line solidified. Now they can go. If he doesn't get hurt, who's to say he won't win? He will not win the MVP. Or he's close to.
We saw what happens when he gets hurt.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a drop off.
By the way, which is great for him. His agent in the playoff game last year must have been going, money, money, money.
All right, now. Money. Speaking of money, let's get to the real question in Nashville. Uh-huh. Is here's Derek Carr. Regardless of what you think of him, mm-hmm. he's now got this contract.
I think he's worth it.
Okay. Marcus Mariota, not too far from now. They'll have to make that same decision here. I think you know that he's going to get a second contract.
Of course.
Unlike at the time when people like Joe Flacco and Colin Kaepernick were signing new deals, the Titans had to decide.
Andy Dalton.
Yeah. Right. But the Titans at one point had to decide what's Jake Locker worth in this, you know, going rate for quarterbacks. Yeah. And they decided, you know, we're not going to sign him to a second contract. It became pretty easy because he just couldn't stay healthy.
He retired.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to happen with Mariota. They're going to have to decide what he's worth in the next contract. The going rate for starting quarterbacks, especially good starting quarterbacks, is enormous.
Well, the going rate for a starting quarterback, and they consider you a good quarterback or franchise quarterback, is $18 million on up.
It's not $18 million. It's
rising, right? Every time somebody like Carr signs,
and up. Like Jameis Winston and Mariota are going to get signed.
What I'm saying is,
what's going to be the number? $30 million a year?
It just goes up.
I don't want to get $30 million. Here's the thing:
what did Flacco get back when he
was at one point he was the highest paid quarterback. I think he was right at
after
20,
they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
it was twenty something million.
Yeah, he was right at 20, 21 million somewhere around there. Here's the thing: two things had to happen for Mariota in order for him to come close to. Derek Carr is one, he has to get him in the playoffs. He has to get him in the playoffs this year. They would have made it last year, I believe, but he gets hurt. That goes to my second. He has to stay healthy. He can't go 3 years in a row getting hurt. He can't, because then now he's labeled injury prone. We talked about it yesterday. I think Tim even mentioned it yesterday. That's the only thing you're worried about with him.
Right.
Some quarterbacks you don't worry.
Well,
some quarterbacks you don't
worry
about.
Derek Carr got hurt.
But that was only one injury. That was only his one injury.
It's the same injury as Mariota.
No, what I'm saying is he's only been hurt once. Mariota's been hurt every year.
Well, 2 years.
Yeah,
I grant you.
And
he
can't get hurt this year. That's what I'm saying.
But Oakland did not worry about Derek Carr's health when they signed him.
No, but I guarantee you had Derek Carr got hurt the first year, missed a bunch of games, then hurt last year, they would have been 25, maybe 22. But 25, nah. Mario, the same situation. A, he has to get him in the playoffs. B, he has to stay healthy. If those two things happen, then I think he either waits another year or he gets the same deal Derek Carr gets.
If he does both of those things, gets him to the playoffs and stays healthy, then the sky is the limit. He can name his price.
Well, he gets the same deal as Derek Carr.
But maybe even more, depending on how deep they would go in the playoffs. I would contend that he's done enough right now. Even if he just misses on both of those counts, he's still going to get a pretty good contract.
Well, you
got to
understand. Well, you got to understand this too.
You hope it doesn't get to that.
Taylor Lewan's up in a minute too, and the way Taylor's been playing, that kid's going to get a lot of money.
These are the things they have to be thinking about on the rise. And this is a good problem. You're building a nucleus of players that you want to sign and keep for a long time.
That's a bad problem.
It's been 5 years since they've had a group of guys like that, right?
This is what
they've
been
hoping.
Yeah.
This is Jake Locker. They don't want to sign him.
It's like the
Predators. All these guys that they drafted, they just didn't have a lot of them that they were like, oh, now there's a core guy that we want here for a long time.
But this is what I tried to tell some fans. Like, you know, I got some texts. It's just not fair. You know, Predators are going to lose this guy.
That's okay.
This is a good problem.
Exactly.
That means things are good. It's healthy.
Yeah.
These are problems the Titans want. By the way, Derek Carr, 5 year, $125 million.
Mm. How much up front?
I don't know. That's what I've been trying to find. Joe Flacco got a $40 million signing bonus.
So Andrew Lux was what? 50, 60? Somewhere around there? 50? He had how much did he get guaranteed? Close to 100.
We need to get a table.
Yeah.
We need to pull up a table.
Yeah, close to 100 guaranteed.
Let's start researching
this. So with that being said, Marcus, if everything happens perfectly, Marcus is guaranteed, if not a million, close to it. Guaranteed money. because you figure you're going to have to give him. If Carr, say Carr got, Flacco got 40, say Carr gets 50 or 60. I do want to know what Andrew Luck got, because Andrew Luck, his guaranteed money was a lot. I think it was like 70. It might have been. I could be wrong. But say Carr gets 60 guaranteed, and Mariota stays healthy, get his teams in the playoff and win a game, his has to be north of 60. It has to be. Or either that number, guaranteed.
Hour number two of 3D coming up next on 102.5 The Game.